Hey, welcome back to the No Contact Club.
Welcome back, everyone.
Nice to not see you all, but hear you.
Hear you. Nice for you guys to hear us.
Yeah, that's right. I got that the wrong way around. Never mind.
Do you know how podcasts work?
Let's start that again. Hey, everyone. Welcome back.
To the No Contact Club. How's it going, Chloe?
Not bad. And how are you?
I am just perfectly content.
That's good. I feel like we act as if we like haven't seen each other for ages. Like, how
well, we
are
haven't
you?
Actually. When did we last see each other?
I don't know. So that's a good point.
Because I think it's actually been a little while since I've come and chilled with you guys.
Yeah.
Even though we do see each other a lot. Yeah. Like, I mean, a lot.
Yeah. And if we don't see each other, we talk. It's not like we don't. Anyway.
No, I hate her when I'm not around her. I hate Chloe.
We each have separate podcasts, the No Porsche Club and the No Chloe Club.
Yeah, that mine's got quite a few followers because we're all anti-Chloe.
Ooh, okay.
No, I'm joking.
I'm joking.
What have you been up to?
Not much, actually. I rediscovered Dr. Romani on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
She's so good. She's got really good videos on narcissism and, like, ways to help deal with it and
she is really good, eh? Like, yeah. It's kind of funny that you rediscovered her or whatever we're calling it, because mm-hmm. at the same time, the other day when I was like writing and doing random stuff, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try and see what the fuss is about for like inner child healing meditation, and the one that I picked was Dr. Romani.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
She's really good.
It was good, but I think because I'm not a very like spiritual person.
Yeah.
And it was very much like language that I didn't identify with, I think,
yeah,
in regards
enough.
To spirituality. So it was kind of hard for me to like get into it. And also I was busy doing other stuff. I wasn't just sitting or lying down specifically to do this meditation. I just wanted to see what it was about. But it was really good. Like, Yeah, it was really good.
So her, the name, you spell her name, Dr. Romani, is Ramani. So you guys should check her out. We also got told through an email about a website called Out of the Fog.
Have you had a look at it?
Not properly. I kind of brought it up when I read the email and stuff, but I think it's got a lot of like resources and stuff.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So definitely, check that one out if you guys are interested.
We also had a comment on one of our Instagram posts from one of our followers, and they were saying that part of her inspiration to start her own podcast was through listening to us, which
that's
is
so cool.
Yeah, that it's awesome. Like, and I know because I read a few of her Insta posts and listened to her first couple of episodes, and she was saying like she'd been wanting to do it for ages. So it's just awesome that
that
she took that leap. But her podcast is Your Uncomfort Zone. I listened to it on Spotify, but it was really
I need to listen to it.
It was really good because she talks about, I mean, from the name you could kind of guess, but she talks about like the idea and the feeling of being uncomfortable or purposely sitting with uncomfortable feelings in order to grow, I guess, which I think is, we haven't really touched on that, but
no, we haven't.
I think it's quite a good concept to think about, the idea of allowing yourself to feel uncomfortable, allowing yourself to sit with.
Yeah, rather than
because I think
trying to fix it.
Yeah, and because like she mentioned this, but I totally agree. Humans by nature don't want to be uncomfortable. They will actively avoid.
Yeah,
uncomfortable.
We want to feel good.
Yeah, and so the act of just like sitting with uncomfortable feelings, I think, is really it's quite a powerful kind of concept.
I've put it on my list. I need to get around to listening to it,
so
that'll be good. If you couldn't tell, we have not received the mics yet from our dad. They haven't come in the post yet, so sound probably is not the best. That's okay.
I started watching Ratched on Netflix. Have you seen it?
No. What is it?
So it's got Sarah Paulson.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, I love her so much. And basically, I'm on to episode 3, I think, and it's about a, you know, nurses, angels of death.
Yes.
So she, so it's essentially this concept of, it's very like Stanley Kubrick kind of vibes, like really awesome colors, really awesome set and scenery. It's very like, what do you call it? Macabre? Macabre. Yeah. Yeah. It's very macabre and sort of melancholic and moody and,
it's not a movie, it's a series.
It's a series.
Yeah.
And it's about this about Sarah Paulson, who's this nurse who goes to work at this insane asylum. And she's pretty much a sociopath. Like,
oh my gosh.
And it's so good so far. It's really messed up. Like, okay, has some really twisted parts of it, you know.
Yeah.
Talking about like lobotomies and stuff. Like, it's so good.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I really want to watch it. Yeah. We were talking about lobotomies last night at the dinner table.
Really?
Yeah, because Ellen was telling us something about a podcast she'd listened to, and then we
was it Stuff You Should Know?
Yeah, yeah. And then we started talking about the Kennedys and Rosemary Kennedy and how she was lobotomized and stuff, and how she's honestly, like, outlived all of them.
I really want
so interesting.
I really want to listen to a podcast or read a book that does a deep dive into the Kennedys, because I know that there's so much.
Michelle has a book. Sorry, my boss has a book. I don't know why I said sorry. It was like I was interrupting. Oh, yeah, she's got a book on it. She says it focuses on the women. It's really good.
Oh, awesome. Because I remember listening to last podcast on the left.
Yeah,
and they were
really
doing
good.
A series on lobotomies. And it was so, it was just so interesting. And
so
they talked
good.
About Rosemary Kennedy when she was lobotomized and how, trigger warning for graphic nature, just FYI, but how when Rosemary Kennedy was being born, the nurse didn't want the mother to give birth when she was in labor, so she forced the mother's legs closed
when
the child was actively trying to come out.
Oh my god.
And then when the mother couldn't hold her legs closed anymore, they just pushed the baby's head
and kept it
inside her vagina.
Why didn't they want her to be
Because
born?
The doctor wasn't there yet. And so they're like, no, you can't give birth yet. The doctor isn't here. So she was born she was born disabled, obviously, because she had like lack of oxygen and brain damage and all this stuff. And so that's why they lobotomized her was because, I mean, I could be wrong in the details, but they lobotomized her because she had these disabilities. Like, she was hidden throughout her whole life.
Oh my God.
And then they were like, in order to fix your...
Yeah.
Your problems, we're going to lobotomize you. But
that's
obviously,
so
then afterwards, she was just like...
Wow. And now she's like outlived like so many of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't believe... It always shocks me that there are people still alive today that have experienced lobotomies.
I know.
Like, and just how backwards the practices were back in like the 60s and 70s.
It's crazy to me... As someone who's like worked and works with kids with like special needs who aren't neurotypical, like to think that kids like that back in the day would have just been put in a hospital somewhere and just left to die. Like,
it's
you know,
and just put through the most insane things. Like, there was actually, I was listening to the most recent My Favorite Murder episode. Have you listened to it?
About the school?
Yes.
So good.
About the Alan
school.
Alan school.
In
and
Maine?
It was like a
school for
military
like naughty kids.
A military boot camp school for naughty kids, but the stuff that they
Oh my gosh. Please go listen to it.
Yeah,
it's
the
so
most recent
good.
Episode, My Favorite Murder. You can find it anywhere that you find
podcasts,
but it was like the treatment that they went through.
It.
Like, it was just insane. Like, sending kids, they would, I know you've already heard this, so I'm telling this for our listeners, but they would like send kids, when they had done something wrong, they would make them stand in this hall and put a broom in front of them so they were separated from all these hundreds of kids. And then they would allow those hundreds of kids to run up to the broom. They weren't allowed to go past it and just yell profanities and the worst things that you can imagine. And then if the kids who were yelling them didn't do this, they would then get punished themselves.
So
they had, like, if they weren't mean enough or if they weren't, what do you call it, like, passionate enough or whatever, they would then be punished themselves. And then if the authorities or whatever didn't think that the kid who was getting yelled at was punished enough, they would put him in a ring and make him box
with other all students of the and students. Stuff. Yeah.
I can't, like, I can't. It's so and it went on until 2011.
That's the thing that's so weird is that, like, we think of stuff like this as happening, like, back in the day.
Yeah.
But, like, that's so recent.
Yeah. It's so, like, literally, 10 years like, ago. Yeah, 10 years. I can't believe that.
Anyway,
sorry if you guys don't like listening to gory things or, yeah, or to, yeah. to.
Portia and I both really enjoy, like, true crime and stuff and, like that.
And, yeah, pretty. Ruthless
yeah.
things where we'll be like, oh, let's listen to
the most fucked up shit you've ever heard.
Yeah. But anyway. I feel like a lot of people with trauma, I've noticed, go in that direction where,
so
they're, like,
many people I
where
know.
They're like, I've experienced this shitty thing. I'm going to now listen to other people yeah. experiencing
yeah.
this shitty thing or something worse. Like,
yeah.
yeah. I just find yeah. it very.
I think it's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get right. started.
Yeah.
Hey. While we are knowledgeable about this stuff because of our collective experiences, we aren't professionals. We research what we talk about and our references are in the show notes, but please don't take anything we say as gospel. If you feel like you need support, you can reach out to us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com or see the links in the show notes. Thanks. So our topic this week is something that we've talked about probably in nearly every episode, at least mentioned it anyway.
Yeah, I think we definitely talk about it a lot.
Yeah, so we're discussing codependency this week, and because we've mentioned it so much before, it kind of feels like we've already talked about it enough for those listening to have this, like, good sort of base of knowledge, but I think it's probably good to do a full episode on it because we can sort of do a deep dive into what it really means and sort of how to grow from that place of being codependent, you know?
Yeah, it kind of plays into everything else
yeah.
surrounding and to do with narcissists and the relationships around them. So it kind of makes sense to explore this concept further
yeah.
and kind of understand what it means to be codependent and what to look out for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen probably more than one article that describes codependency as, like, sort of like a dance between the narcissist and the codependent. And I think that's a really, really good description for what it means within the scope of narcissistic relationships.
Yeah, like a general definition yeah. of codependency is someone who feels responsible for another person's feelings, problems, behaviors, so much so that they end up ignoring their own feelings, yeah. problems, and behaviors. You know?
Yeah, you kind of sacrifice your own mental, like, health and well-being just to keep that relationship going and to take care of that narcissist.
Yeah, because, I mean, codependency is developed kind of in response to emotional neglect. So when we're talking about having a narcissistic parent especially, we can't forget this, that this codependency would have started developing from birth, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, just by nature, children, teenagers, and I guess, you know, young adults as well, we're kind of inherently dependent
yeah.
on the authority figures
yeah,
in our
we really
life,
are.
Whether that's a mother or a father or uncles, aunties, teachers, you know, and they kind of help us make sense of the world and develop a sense of self and how we relate to the world and people around us.
Yeah, and I guess when you're codependent, you invest heavily into the life of another person
yeah.
and leave yourself with, you know, this low self-worth and a self-identity, I guess, that has these foundations that are predominantly built in external validation,
yep.
I would say.
Yeah.
And when we think about this in relation to growing up with a narcissistic mother, you're essentially you're in the perfect position to almost be groomed into being codependent with your mother.
Yeah, I think this episode's going to be kind of hard for me because, I mean, it was hard enough just kind of writing it and,
yeah.
and going over what we were going to be talking about. But yeah, I mean, it's something I relate to quite heavily and struggle with a lot still.
Yeah.
Because for so long, you know, I was mum's, like, best friend.
Yeah.
Especially once her and my dad broke up and the relationship was, like, 100% codependent.
Yeah.
Like, obviously I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, I felt responsible for her emotions and her moods. And I mean, it's pretty fucked up, but let's see how we go.
So coming back to that descriptor of codependency being a dance between the narcissist and their victim,
yeah.
we can almost think of this dance being between someone who has been conditioned and groomed into the position of being a people pleaser or a fixer, and the narcissist who will kind of capitalize on this weakness, in air quotes.
Yeah, and I mean, they do anything they can to keep you yeah. in that vulnerable position too.
Yeah, I mean, people who become codependent, they're naturally very giving and sacrificing people. Yeah, they want to help. They want to people please. They want to do what they can. And this is like gold, I would say, to a narcissist.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it could come across like we're just talking about someone who's a nice person, they're pleasant to be around, they're accommodating.
Yeah.
And we all know people like that. But we're talking about someone who is when we're talking about someone who's a people pleaser or codependent and wants to go out of their way to help people, it's not a positive thing.
Yeah, it's not. It can seem like, yes, like a positive thing, but inherently we're not trying to come across by saying this is, you know, this great positive thing, because it's at a detriment to yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So most of the time people pleasers are doing it as a trauma response.
Yeah.
Like I do this a lot. It's kind of like how I control situations when I feel out of control.
Yeah.
Usually it comes in the form of tidying up. Like I'll be the first one to clear the table or do the dishes.
Yeah.
And I always get told off by Ellen and my boss and stuff. They're like, just sit down. And I'm like, no, I need to make someone else happy like that. You know, I need to be like, hey, let me take this off your hands.
I think that's a really, like, strong theme in terms of, like, you trying to, you know, do the fix-it thing, trying to help everybody and trying to, you know, clear the dishes and stuff. Because of the fact when we were younger, it was such a huge theme of you're not helping out, you're not trying, you're no good to this family because you're not serving the family.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, on that, it come like that kind of grows into you having to adapt to the conditions.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you grow up and you still have these behaviors. And
yeah.
A way to manage chaotic or abusive conditions is by being accommodating and compliant.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to grow out of. You feel responsible for solving other people's problems, like, you know, the dishes, even though that's a small problem.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're growing up with a narcissistic mother or father, you have to adapt.
Yeah.
Like, growing up in that chaotic or abusive household, having love or resources withheld, being idealized and devalued time after time, it's all conditioning.
Yeah.
And as a child, you then start to understand that if you act in specific ways, you'll get certain responses.
Yeah, or lack of responses in regards to abusive and traumatizing treatment.
Yeah, definitely. It's all a way to try and manage this crazy world that you're living in with the narcissist being at the center of it.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, they're never not at the center of it.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows a narcissist, you'll know exactly what we mean by the narcissist being at the center of everything. I mean, they come first no matter what. The world revolves around them, and we're just kind of stuck in that orbit trying to make do with what we've been dealt.
Yeah, and I think that's why this dance between the pleaser and the narcissist fits so well, because while a narcissist is someone who is effectively, I mean, it's a very broad, a generic description, but they're effectively someone who's self-absorbed and entitled with a distinct lack of empathy, I would say. But someone who's codependent is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
So the two fit together so well because both needs are met on each side.
Yeah, and the narcissist needs someone that's going to elevate their ego and make them feel good.
Yeah.
You know, they need someone who's going to meet those emotional and physical needs, and someone who is codependent slots right into that place because codependent people have this, like, I guess, inherent need to sort of provide all of those things.
Yeah.
So, you know, you latch onto the narcissist as a codependent person, you'll feel like they're almost in turn, you feel like you're being provided for as well.
Yeah.
Even though you're not.
But
really.
And I guess that's not to say that it's not like a really stressful situation to be in for someone who is codependent either. Like, it's not like a codependent who is in a relationship with a narcissist or is a child of a narcissistic parent. It's not like they're just chugging along happily while all of this is going on.
Mm.
You know, when we say the codependent is being provided for, we're meaning they're being provided for on a subconscious level. So their need for validation and safety is able to be managed through their people pleasing.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I think about us as kids and how different elements of codependency were seen in our lives, particularly my own experience as a very codependent child all the way to a young adult, I just can't get over the sense of how fucked up it is.
Yeah.
Like, you're a child managing the ego of a fully grown adult.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You're responsible for managing their emotions and moods. Like, I once had a week off school when I was, I'm pretty sure, 13 or 14, no older, because mum broke up with a partner and needed my help. Like, it didn't matter that I wasn't old enough to deal with those adult emotions that come with the breakup of a relationship. But in my eyes, I was like, good, I'm doing like, the right thing.
It's your responsibility.
Yeah, I've got to fix her and make her better. So I felt this responsibility towards her, but also like to you, my other sisters.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, mum's got to get better for them. And in the meantime, I was second mum. Like it's fucked up.
And I think that also plays into her alcoholism as well. Because when you're talking about you had a sense of responsibility to her, but also our sisters, and this feeling of like, I need to make sure that mum is still around to provide. And I think And I think that's why quite often with the alcohol thing, we weren't going to go and tell people about it because what in our minds, what's going to happen if we tell people about this alcoholism, we're going to be taken away from her or, you know, the family life is going to be destroyed or whatever.
So even though it was a fucked up family life, we wanted to keep it that way.
Yeah. And by nature, you're wanting to protect these elements of your family life because.
Yeah. And I guess in a way, me being codependent was enabling her as well because I was giving her permission almost to be this shitty person. And
I mean, we all were.
Yeah.
I mean, but we, also we were kids. Like, let's not forget.
Yeah.
But I think it is like when you're codependent and I guess we can think of it in two ways, like codependent as a child or codependent as a fully grown adult.
Yeah.
As an adult, you could say that you're enabling her, but as a child, definitely not. Because I think as an adult, when you're involved with a narcissist, you're both enabling each other.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Not to say like, you know, that being codependent is a bad thing.
No, because
it's just a response to a situation.
Exactly.
But, you know. It can be kind of confusing as well because you're having this terrible experience with this narcissistic person, but at the same time you're stuck and you can't let go. You know, you're dealing with emotional neglect by becoming overtly dependent on the person who is neglecting you.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yeah. When you're a kid, your needs should come first.
Yes, no matter what.
Yeah, your brain is
regardless of whether your parent has gone through a breakup or not.
Your brain is still developing and making connections as to how the world works. But when that's stunted and you become codependent, you end up as an adult with behavior that turns maladaptive.
Yeah.
And it usually ends up repeating itself in future relationships.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. I mean, it's really interesting too to see the similarities between a narcissist and someone who is codependent because they both have this kind of intrinsic like sense of shame and denial. They both have this need to control other people and they both rely on people and outside sources for validation.
Yeah.
They have really dysfunctional boundaries as well.
Yeah. Boundaries is a huge one.
Have we done an episode on boundaries?
Yeah. You and Alan did.
Oh no, didn't we do gaslighting?
No, we have done an episode on boundaries,
I
think.
Yeah, I thought we have.
I think we have.
Yeah.
Because I remember talking about this. It. We're on to episode 18 now.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few to
Please
remember.
Forgive our bad memories.
But I think I'm pretty certain that we have done an episode on boundaries. But, because I seen when I was writing this little bit about boundaries here, I remember thinking back to our episode on boundaries, knowing that I've said some of this stuff.
Okay.
But when you think of like boundaries between children and adults, they're so important when you're growing up. Like having boundaries, I think, means that you grow up with this inherent knowledge that you are an autonomous human being from a young age with valid thoughts and feelings outside of your relationship with your mother.
Yeah.
Of course, as we've talked about multiple times, narcissists are great at blurring boundaries and normalizing behavior that isn't normal.
Yeah, and so just talking about that, the boundaries thing, that kind of, you can see how growing up, you're almost conditioned to think the same things as your mother.
Yeah.
And
Well, I think a really good example of this, I think a really good example of not just this, but like outside of it, is you think about a child that grows up in a home with a really liberal, yes, progressive family, right?
Yeah.
So they're a child, they're a toddler, whatever. They're growing up in this household where they believe that everyone is equal and boys can wear dresses and girls can, you know, play with trucks and be scientists, yeah, and all this stuff. But then they go to school and because they're now experiencing a world outside of what their family, yes, and their mother's home is and their father's home is, they're now their eyes are opening to different
perspectives.
So when we think about that in terms of like growing up with a narcissistic parent, they make it impossible for you to have different perspectives.
Yeah.
So it's like they'll really, you know, normalize this shitty behavior, so yeah, it's impossible to you're like brainwashed into believing
what
they're saying.
Well, it you lose that connection to yourself as well,
yeah,
and it gets to a point where you don't exist outside of how you exist to the narcissist.
Yeah,
you're not your own person, you're sort of an extension of that person.
Yeah.
And they project their thoughts, their feelings onto you and end up blaming you for their own mistakes because they're so incapable of tolerating shortcomings in themselves.
Yeah. I think it's also really interesting to think about how narcissists have this lack of connection to their true self as well. Like, it's again another,
yeah,
correlation between someone who's codependent and someone who's a narcissist.
Yeah. There are so many similarities between someone who's codependent and a narcissist. Narcissists almost create this like fake self, in air quotes, that they idealize, and they deprive themselves of any real inner growth and have a complete lack of connection to their real self. So by doing this, their ego is so fragile that they then become dependent on others to validate this kind of made up version of themselves.
So in a way, narcissists are also codependent.
Yeah, yeah.
They're also codependent, just in a different way.
Well, how many times have we said that mum needs someone with her? She can't be alone. Well,
because they need an outside source to validate their you know, this fake self that they've developed.
Yeah, and they also need that narcissistic supply.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic that like the cookie cutter example of narcissists is that, you know, they declare to everyone around them that they have this high self-regard and they you know, puff their chest out and they're very like, I love myself kind of thing, when realistically they're actually quite desperate for admiration and validation from others.
Yeah, like think about mum. She was always so loud in her declaration of like loving herself and not needing other people, especially after splitting with our stepdad. And she's like, you know, I'm this happy person, I don't need anyone. But like, when you look at her actions, like those two things don't add up. Like,
yeah,
she is constantly in need of validation and adoration through like keeping like our sisters around her, through expensive purchases, clothing and horse floats and all this kind of stuff. Like it you don't have to tell people that you're happy if you're happy, you know?
Yeah. You know, someone who is happy doesn't need to express to everyone within hearing distance that they are happy. They're just happy. You know, someone who is kind doesn't go around being like, I'm so kind, like I'm a really kind person.
Exactly.
They're just kind.
Yeah.
Like it's the same goes
for, you just do it.
Yeah, you just are the thing and you shouldn't, you know, feel the need to go around yelling it at everybody to try and convince them, because they'll be able to just see it.
Exactly. If you truly are kind or tidy or whatever, people will see that through your actions, you know? And so often with narcissists, it's kind of like this opposite thing where they'll say, yeah, I'm really kind-hearted, I'm a really good person, but their actions do not show that. They show the exact opposite.
Yeah. I don't know if this is like unhealthy on my part or not, but this kind of stuff has really turned me into a person that doesn't trust what people are saying about themselves outright. Like, if someone has to convince those around them with their words that they are kind or happy or giving or whatever, like that's a red flag for me.
Yeah, I know. I totally get that. I guess it could be unhealthy if you weren't letting anybody in at all and not trusting anyone. But I think it's healthy to be cautious and on guard, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah.
There was actually one article that I read that I was reading about codependency and narcissism, and the final paragraph on the article said something along the lines of codependents dream of having they said something like codependents dream of having this, you know, unconditionally loving partner, but end up submitting to their dysfunctional destiny. Wow. And I get what they're meaning by that line. It kind of like sounds very hopeless in and of itself, but I do get what they're meaning by this. Because of the inherent nature of someone who is codependent, sometimes people don't get out of that dysfunctional system that they've known all their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a trap. Like, you want to have healthy relationships, but because you are so conditioned to be this codependent human being, you're just continuously being sucked into these toxic relationships.
Yeah, yeah, it repeats because it's, it's an addiction.
Exactly.
I mean, the article did go on to talk about, you know, about how the way to get out of this toxic cycle is by deciding to heal the wounds that caused this codependency in the first place.
Yeah.
But I think, like, this is probably one of the most important messages anyone should get from this episode is go forward with the intention of healing.
Yeah, because, definitely.
Because, honestly, the cycles do repeat. They really do repeat. Yeah. And that's not saying, again, I know we've said this in the past, that's not us saying that it's the victim's fault.
No, at all.
Like, nobody asked to be abused. Nobody asked to be in relationships with narcissistic people or whatever. But it is so important to understand that you are in charge of your own destiny in terms of healing your...
Yeah.
Healing your...
Self,
yeah.
And I mean, like, being a people pleaser, it kind of seems okay on paper. On paper, you're kind, you're giving, you're accommodating, but realistically it doesn't serve you. You know, it's almost disingenuous in a way to continue down that path, because you're not allowing this, like, true sense of self, you're not giving it the space to just be. You know, it's almost like an addiction, and it's 100% so exhausting, because you are not putting your own self first. You're constantly in this role of performing and micromanaging relationships in your life.
That's a really big one for me, and I think I think we've talked about it before, where we almost like micromanage relationships and interactions with people. Like, I do this all the time, where I'll like guess what someone else is thinking of me in the middle of a conversation, and then manage my responses and actions, and even down to the way like I position my body, or I like position my face or whatever, in order to maintain some kind of positive response to them. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. It's kind of like you're guessing how that person's gonna feel, so even though you don't know how they're going to feel or react to what you're saying, so you change the way you're acting to try and shift the perception. It's like this messed up, like, you're projecting, but what you're projecting on them might not even be true. So you're but whatever you're projecting, you're changing in yourself so that you don't project. Like, it's
so messed up. But I think that's like such a huge example of codependency and people pleasing.
Yeah, because I mean, we've mentioned earlier that codependency and people pleasing at its core is not about pleasing the other person. Yeah. It's about providing this like validation and safety to yourself. So us micromanaging our interactions with people might seem like it's so we can keep the other person happy, when really it's so we can manage this person's perception of us and get the best possible outcome for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, changing and moving on from this way of living isn't easy either. Like you said, codependency is an addiction. You've become addicted to how people-pleasing makes you feel. It becomes this safety net that you can't let go of.
Yeah, and I mean, it is nice to, like, help people out. Like, I love helping people, and I love doing things for people, especially if there's stress. Like, through my job as a nanny, like, you know, I can see when my boss is stressed, I'm like, oh, I'll make sure I do this today.
But then I think, like, when we're talking about codependency and people pleasing, it's about boundaries.
Yes.
So it's about you being able to say no and not feeling like I'm a fucking shit person because I said no. Or because I didn't, you know, go do this thing for this person.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's a good point, really, because I guess within my job, I'm kind of, I don't know, it's like not expected, but like, of course I'm gonna like help out, you know? Anyway, I feel like I'm rambling a little bit there, but I almost feel like codependency and people pleasing is kind of a way that you sort of avoid your true self in a way.
Yeah, I think so. Because think about when you're a child And you're molded into being what your narcissistic parent wants you to be. Mm. You're told time and time again that certain parts of yourself, you know, certain parts of your true self are bad, yeah. that you'll only be loved if you do certain things or act certain ways.
Yeah.
You can't be the real you because that just isn't good enough.
Yeah, like how with ballet, if you didn't want to do ballet, if we did ballet as kids, and when I said I didn't want to do it, the guilt and shame
yeah.
and
yeah,
like
because you're not
anger.
Being this person that yeah. this narcissist wants you to be.
Yeah.
So you become, you know, someone else because you can't be the real you because...
Yeah. You've been told it's not good enough.
Yeah. So you become someone else and you know, put on this mask of people pleasing. You prance around and fool everyone into thinking you're this perfect person who doesn't have any needs. You know, you pretend that you're someone who is only there to serve and make everyone else happy. But
yeah.
there comes a time where you have to ask yourself, like, what about your authentic self, that person behind the mask of people pleasing, is so inherently bad?
Exactly. Like, I can guarantee anyone listening to this who has grown up with a narcissistic mother or father and who feels like they might be codependent,
yeah.
they would have been told for years that their true self is not good enough.
Yeah.
And when you're told something like that over and over, especially as a kid, you yeah. internalize it.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to sit back and go, yeah, I'm a shitty person, or yeah, I'm bad. But if there's one thing we know about narcissists, it's that they are masters at projecting. And that's exactly what they've done by telling you that you are less than or a bad person deep down.
Sorry. Yeah. I was actually talking to my therapist last week about, you know, how I've had anger issues my whole life. Mm. Like, I was such an angry kid. I was an angry teenager. I was an angry adult. And how, like, it was this weird feeling of, like, inherently I feel like I'm a bad, evil person because I know I have this anger inside of me that, like, if anybody sees the real me or whatever, they're automatically going to know that Portia is the big bad wolf or whatever.
Yeah.
But he said something that I hadn't thought about. He was like, what if I was just a kid who happened to be angry sometimes? Mm. Or like, what if mum didn't know how to deal with a teenager What if mum didn't know how to deal with a teenager who had these, you know, big teenage emotions? And so she labelled them as anger management issues. I think that we're so quick to judge ourselves and demonize these parts of ourselves that deserve just as much recognition as the good stuff. And looking back, yeah, it's no wonder I was an angry kid sometimes. I was like starving myself and purging whatever food I ate. I was severely mentally unwell and suicidal. And my mother was a narcissistic alcoholic who played mental games with all five of her daughters, you know? I had this like...
What do you mean? That's normal.
I had like such a warped sense of reality and no way to truly understand how to manage these big feelings because the person who was meant to lay the groundwork was on the computer getting drunk and chatting to men online.
Oof, what a line.
Sorry for the run. It's just what I'm trying to get at here is I really want those who are listening to ask yourself, whose voice is it that's telling you that your authentic self is inherently bad? Who are you serving by people pleasing and being codependent? Is it you that's deciding to put on the mask, or is it your narcissistic parent or husband or wife or whoever that has projected onto you that their own bad feelings... Wait, what? What am I saying?
That has projected onto you their own bad feelings.
Yeah, their own bad feelings and forced you to feel so ashamed about your true self that the only way to get by is to hide. That was a bit of a mouthful, but what I'm trying to say is really think about who your authentic self is and think about why
you think it's bad, why you've been told it's bad.
Yeah, like whose voice is it?
Exactly.
Because I can guarantee that's fucking my mum's voice.
Yeah, and like it makes me so mad. Like if you had been parented properly, if we had all been parented properly, but if you had received help for what you were going through, had a proper support system, you know, maybe saw a counsellor, who knows what the differences would be. Like just a kind of a, like a side note, I don't think narcissists are very good at dealing with like big teenage emotions like depression or suicide.
Well, because automatically as a narcissistic parent, they want their kids to be these perfect things.
Yes.
And so any deviance, like any deviation or whatever it's called from this cookie cutter, narrative. You know, perfect child narrative is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when mum found out I was cutting myself, she brought in Bridie and was like, demanded to see it. Like, never mind
that it's... that is so humiliating.
Yeah.
And so damaging.
It should have just been her or her and my stepdad, didn't she?
And it shouldn't have been this shame thing.
Yeah, it should have been, let's talk about it, what's going on.
Yeah.
Didn't she deal with you cutting in a similar way? Or the binging thing? I can't remember.
It was kind of both. With the cutting thing, I remember when I... when she found out that I was cutting or something, and like you had found out, I think, and
I was nosy.
She told me to come into her bedroom, and she was like, "Show me your arm" or something like that, and I like showed her, and she was like, "Why have you been doing this" or whatever? Because at the time I was so sick, I was so just like, I can't believe how deep I was in like mental illness at the time. But like, and she was like, "Why have you been doing this?" And I tried to make something up, like, "Oh, you know, I've just been feeling really bad." But she like cut me off, and I was like, "Oh, you know, I've just been feeling." And she's like, "No, don't be silly. Just stop it. Like, stop doing that." And she didn't allow me the space to be like,
"So that's what you did. That's how you deal with it. How have we not figured that out?" she didn't allow you the space.
But it was like also with the binging thing when I was an adult, like a few years ago, because I struggle with food issues. but like with the binging thing, she found like a bunch of stuff that was like proof of me binging. And instead of her being like, "What is going on? Like, this is really strange," she was like yelling at me.
Yeah.
And because she was really drunk at the time, and she was yelling at me saying that I'm a fat bitch or whatever, because I'm like binging this food, but I'm starving my cat because I had him on a diet at the time because he was too overweight.
He's a big tubby boy.
Yeah.
But that's so fucked up. Like, if I found out that someone I loved was maybe struggling, maybe they weren't looking after themselves properly, maybe I found out they were binging, maybe I found out they were cutting, like, why the fuck would you go in with that attitude? Yeah. Why would you not be like, let's talk about this. Let's do what we can. Let's help you. You know, it's so fucked up.
Yeah. I feel like we're getting so angry on this episode, and I'm here for it. okay, let's go back to codependency.
I did want to mention, though, you don't have to be this, like, cookie cutter codependent to have the behaviors of someone who's codependent.
Yeah.
You can exist as a people pleaser and a fixer, as well as attempting to have, you know, this kind of autonomous and authentic life.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm like 90% of the time. Like, I feel like there are elements of my personality where I'm obviously people pleasing and codependent, but also I'm very loud, if you guys hadn't noticed, and very passionate and know what I want or where I stand.
Yeah, I mean, you can be two opposing things at once, you know. You can have this strive for this like authenticity, but also have areas where you acknowledge that you are codependent.
Yeah.
And you know, that's okay. That's kind of where you start at the beginning of this journey of like healing, is that you have this self-awareness that you've got this behavior, and now you can try and spot it while it's happening.
Yeah. And I mean, getting out of a relationship with a narcissist when you're codependent is a battle in and of itself. Like, when you're codependent, you often don't see ending the relationship or going no contact as an option.
Yeah.
That goes directly against what it truly means to be codependent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, someone who's codependent sees leaving the relationship as this, like, I guess kind of like a personal failure.
Yeah.
Like, you see saving the relationship as your job.
Yeah.
The narcissist's emotions and their well-being is your responsibility as a codependent. That's why so often it's so easy to get trapped in these kinds of relationships. I mean, we've had someone say to someone we know that if they left our mom, she would kill herself. And I mean, that's just completely fucked up and preying on someone who's codependent. If you're responsible for this person's well-being, of course you're going to stick around.
Yeah, and because codependents have such an immense lack of self-esteem, often the thought of leaving this important relationship and being alone, that's often the thought of that is worse than the thought of remaining in this shitty, chaotic, and often abusive relationship.
Yeah. I mean, I think often the ending of the relationship usually comes when there's this kind of breaking point in a way. You know, there's this addictive element to a codependent relationship that it's not an easy trap to get out of. But as long as you're willing to ask for help and do the hard work, going to therapy, decide that you want that better life for yourself, you're on the right path.
Yeah, and I know we sound like a broken record here. I feel like we just
I know.
Say it so much, but if accessible, therapy is so, so, so important.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to break these chains that have been with you since childhood, because they will be freaking ingrained into your psyche.
Yeah.
It's
so hard to get over childhood trauma and shit that's fucked you up as a kid.
Because it's not just like, I'm not negating people's experiences when they get PTSD from like a one-off traumatic event.
Of course,
like, it's fucked up. It's difficult to get over, whatever. But like, when we're thinking about like childhood trauma, it's this like, you become changed as a person, and your roots of being your a human,
your
foundations are in this like muck of freaking
shit,
messed up shit. So it's like, of course that's going to follow you when you're older. Of course it is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could probably be another motto for us, like get therapy if you can.
Yeah.
And I guess some people might not want, you know, they might not listen to us for advice, but even if one person who listens goes, like, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so feel free to send us emails, maybe tell us about your experience with codependency, you know, maybe some success stories or, you know, growth, moving on, that sort of stuff. Our email is thenocontactclub@gmail.com.
And listen, if you're not there yet, like if you're just starting those first few steps of healing or you know, going no contact, or
just realizing
that all this is going on in your life, like it will feel scary and foreign, but it just means you're on the way to doing the work to empower yourself and start healing. Like that your uncomfort zone podcast that we're listening to, that uncomfortable feeling that you get just means you're on the right path.
Like, yeah, it's good.
You have to be uncomfortable in order to
make change. Move forward. Yeah, exactly. As always, you can check us out on Instagram at the No Contact Club and on Facebook, same thing. Did you want to repeat what I just said, Portia? Like last
week. Thanks for that, Chloe. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Stay classy.
Stay classy.